Can I have everybody's attention, please? Ocean City Planning Board, April 8th, first meeting, second meeting. This meeting's been advertised pursuant to Public Law 231, also known as the Public Open Meeting Act. Everything related to this has been at the Knight Building for at least 10 days before the meeting, and
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if anybody has electronic devices, can they put them on mute so I don't have to hear them? Because all this stuff is sensitive, and we got a recorder here that I don't think she wants to listen to it either. So if you can do that, I'd appreciate it. And can we go to a roll call, please?
Mr. Adams.
Here.
Mr. Allegretto.
Here.
Mr. Barnes.
Here.
Mr. Becker.
Here.
Mr. Birch.
Here.
Mrs. Halliday. Mr. Jessel. Mr. Loper.
Here.
Mr. Shepherd.
Here.
Mr. Stell.
Here.
Dr. Vandeshore.
I'm going to jump the agenda around a little bit. It's going to go 3 is number 1, number 2 is number 1 on the agenda, and number 3 is at the end, the consistency report. So based on that, housing, the revised housing element and fair share plan. City Attorney, Ms. Crossan.
Thank you, Mr. Roper. Good evening, planning board members. My name is Donna Crossan. I'm the attorney for the city of Ocean City. Before you this evening, as I was 10 years ago, to talk about Ocean City complying with its affordable housing obligations. In New Jersey, municipalities are required by the state Supreme Court case of Mount Laurel to provide a fair share of low and middle income housing units, or be subject to builder's remedy lawsuits where a builder can come in and offer to provide generally high density residential development without complying with the zoning ordinance, because they will create units towards the unmet municipal obligation. So in order to avoid that, go through this process every 10 years, and we're in the fourth round of this process, to get court sanctioned order indicating that Ocean City is in compliance and is doing what it needs to provide its fair share of these units. What's before you in your package is the housing element and fair share plan, which has been prepared by our affordable housing consultant, Acuity. Dan Lemmer from Acuity is here tonight to answer questions that you might have. And that the housing element is a section of our master plan which identifies our specific housing needs and potential sites for development. And just boiled down, the fair share plan shows how we will meet our obligation. Also in that document is an amended spending plan. You guys approved housing element fair share plan earlier. This is revised. The spending plan is revised, updated to reflect new opportunities for development, including additional units at the Housing Authority project over the next 10 years. We're asking you tonight to review this, ask questions about, let us answer your questions, and then adopt this revised housing element and fair share plan. Later on your agenda, you'll have an opportunity to take a look at the amended affordable housing ordinance, which will replace the affordable housing ordinance that's currently in the zoning. In the zoning ordinance, Mr. Shula's written a consistency report and we'll take a vote on as to whether that's consistent with the master plan, and that will go to City Council at its meeting in April for adoption. Once these things are all in place and the City Council has endorsed this plan that's before you and amended the spending plan, we will seek an order of compliance with the court indicating that Ocean City is immune from builder's remedy lawsuits for the next 10 years. If anybody has any questions, Mr. Levin can answer anything in detail since he is the author of the document before you, which doesn't look like you have the amendments. They're online in the city clerk's office or in Jamie's office. This is just a fraction of what Acuity has prepared for us and for Ocean City. to get the city into compliance. So, Mr. Loper, we stand ready to answer questions from your board.
Any questions from the board at this point? I just have one question.
Absolutely.
Basically, the plan that we're looking at is what we looked at. I think they were quad units that were going into the Tex Village area.
That was part of the third round.
That's the third
round. Among the things that were done in the third round from 2015 to 2025 was the redevelopment of the Pex Beach Village.
Right, right.
The senior units were demolished and those folks were moved to the new building at Spytel at 6th and West. Those senior units were demolished, and the new construction at Pex Beach Village is going up now. The folks who are still living at Peck in between, 4th and 5th Street, between Haven and Simpson, are the families in the Housing Authority property. They will be moved into those new units where the pilings are going in now. Additional units will be built so additional families can go in. This amended plan contemplates units to be built where the existing family units are that will now be demolished once the folks have moved into their new quarters, which are flood compliant, updated. What they're living in now were, of course, state of the art in 1960. So it's time for those sandy damaged and then quickly repaired units to go, and those folks should have new housing. And that's what we're working on in conjunction with the Housing Authority.
Thank you. No questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So
we'll open it up to the public at this point. Do I have a motion?
So moved, Chairman.
Do I have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we're at the affordable housing plan. Anybody from the public have a comment at this point? Come forward. Seeing none, do I have a motion to close the public?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public's closed. Consistency will be done at the end of the meeting.
So the consistency review will just be like any other zoning ordinance that you've ever reviewed for us.
Right.
But at this time, we'd ask you to seek a motion to approve this amended, to adopt this amended housing element fair share plan. And we'll ask your court solicitor to provide a resolution, hopefully indicating that you have in fact voted in favor of adopting this.
Based on what we've heard from our applicant, do we have a motion?
May I have a motion in the affirmative for the adoption of the amended housing plan element and fair share plan?
Based on what we've heard from our solicitor, do I have a motion?
Shepherd.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Allegretta?
Yes.
Mr. Barnes?
Yes.
Mr. Becker?
Yes.
Mr. Shepherd?
Yes.
Mr. Adams?
Yes.
Mr. Birch?
Yes.
Mr. Stell?
Yes.
Mr. Loper?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. number two on the agenda is PBA 26-0036 Partnership Verizon Wireless 3308 Bay Avenue, Block 307, Lot 23, RL150 Zone.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. For the record, my name is Michael Beck of Beck Law LLC, a law firm. I am representing Selco Partnership, doing business as Verizon Wireless. We are here this evening with regard to city-owned property located at 3308 Bay Avenue. That is Block 3207, Lot 23.01. As the chairman indicated, the property is in the RL150 zone. The applicant is here this evening seeking minor site plan and conditional use approval to construct a wireless telecommunications facility consisting of a 115-foot monopole and associated ground equipment to be located inside of a 38-by-62-foot lease area that the City of Ocean City has leased to the applicant. That area is proposed to be fenced in with a chain link fence, a 6-foot high chain link fence, and then surrounded by new landscaping. Access to the site is proposed from Bay Avenue. and across the existing gravel lot at the site. The site is currently unimproved, but for telecommunications and electric and gravel lot, which is there presently. Telecommunications facilities are permitted conditional uses on city-owned property pursuant to your ordinance. And by way of procedural background on this particular application, this site was in fact selected by the city pursuant to a stipulation of settlement and consent order from May of 2025. That same consent order having been approved by this board at its meeting on March 5th of 2025 and by this board's resolution on April 2nd of 2025. In both those resolutions and the consent order, the city agreed that only site plan approval is required in this case, as the property is deemed to be in compliance with the wireless telecommunication standards, that being the conditional use standards that apply to the property. This evening, I have our radio frequency expert with me. I have our site engineer, and I also have our professional planner who can address the ordinance and compliance with the ordinance. So, Mr. Chair, that is my opening, and unless there's something further, I will call my first witness.
Okay.
Yes.
115 feet, but then on the application is 125. That's a big deal, but is it 115 or 125?
It is, in fact, 115-foot monopole. The original settlement, and may be looking at the lease exhibits that are attached to the settlement rather than the plans that have been submitted. So the original settlement indicated a 125-foot monopole. Mm-hmm. However, your ordinance says that the maximum height is 125 feet, including the lightning rod. So the applicant has, in fact, lowered the height of the monopole. The lightning rod will bring it to 125 feet, but the pole itself stops at 115.
Okay.
With the lightning rod, that's correct. I'll call our radio frequency engineer first.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give to this board will be the truth?
I do.
And please state your name.
Sure, Andrew Thomas Bellman Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-H-N.
Peterson, can you please give the board the benefit of your education, experience, and any professional licenses you hold?
Sure. I have undergraduate and graduate degrees, both in electrical engineering, both from Lehigh University, specifically Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering and Master of Engineering in Electrical Engineering. I have a specialty in wireless telecommunication. I've been involved in hundreds of applications for new facilities, facility augmentations over the years. Since starting in the industry about 1997, I've testified before hundreds of municipalities in New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New York, and some other states. I'm also a registered professional engineer in the state of New Jersey, as well as a handful of other states. I've also testified in federal court and state courts as an expert.
I'll offer Mr. Peterson.
We can accept those credentials as spoken, and he may proceed.
Thank you.
May I ask a question? Yes. What firm are you?
DBM Engineering.
DBM Engineering. Thank you.
Mr. Peterson, did you at the request of the applicant undertake an investigation into the effects of electromagnetic emissions from the proposed facility?
Yes, I did.
And before we get into your findings, is Verizon Wireless the applicant licensed by the Federal Communications Commission?
They are.
And does Verizon have multiple frequency bands, multiple licenses?
They do.
And you're familiar with all of those licenses and the proposal that's before the board this evening?
Yes, I am.
And as a request of the applicant's investigation, do you prepare a report?
I do.
I would like to introduce what I'm marking as, first I'd like to identify what I'm marking as Exhibit A1. Can you please identify the date and the title of your report?
Sure, A1 is dated March 24th, 2026. And the title is Electromagnetic Exposure Analysis.
And did you prepare what we marked as A1?
I did.
I would like to, with the board's permission, hand out copies to the board of A1. Do you mind going that way?
Sure.
You
know?
You don't need one.
No,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Pile's big enough.
It is. Thank you. I do have extras as well. Okay. So, Mr. Peterson, you're familiar with what we've marked as Exhibit A1, the report dated March 24th of 2026.
I am.
And did you prepare the report?
I did.
Particular assumptions that you make in preparing your report when analyzing potential radio frequency emissions from any site such as what's proposed here?
There are a myriad of upper limit assumptions that are considered when I do an analysis like this. First, I assume that all of the radios are transmitting at maximum power 24/7, 365. I assume that there is, I neglect any attenuation from any surrounding building material, environmental and man-made clutter, so foliage, roadways, etc., any buildings that may attenuate the signal. I also assume, as per the FCC guidelines, a reflection factor, which will increase the exposure levels by a significant factor. And then there are several other upper limit assumptions, including maximum pattern gain of the antennas, significant electrical down tilt, and all these are stated in the report.
And when you make these assumptions, is it for the purpose of, I don't want to say exaggerating the emissions that come from the site, but determining the absolute maximums that are could occur, even though they may not be likely?
Yes, it's to establish that upper limit of which the exposure level could not possibly exceed.
Right. So, for example, you said that you assume that every channel will be operating 24/7 at its full power. Is that likely to occur?
No.
And why?
Well, there's always a little bit of headroom that's maintained in the radio's power output, and that's to facilitate some of the background messaging that goes on, handoffs and other messaging between the devices and the facility that lets your call or data session take place. So there's always some reserve power that has to be held back so the system can function.
So you mentioned the Federal Communications Commission and that Verizon Wireless is licensed by the FCC. Are you also familiar with all the standards which exists in the United States to regulate any potential emissions from a facility like this?
Yes.
And having looked at those regulations, how do they compare with what you found at this site with regard to approve this application?
So when I analyzed this facility at all levels of ground level, all locations of ground level public access, and compare that to the allowable limits under the FCC guidelines, the exposure levels would be 0.13% of the applicable FCC standard. So that's almost a thousandth of, about a thousandth of the limit. So maybe 900 times below the FCC limit. So the facility will be compliant by a significant margin, even when we assume all of those worst case upper limits that were mentioned.
So at that operation, with those types of emissions, which he testified is approximately 900 times below the FCC's limits, is there anything that you could advise the board and the public about that's, you know, a real-world example of that type of emissions?
Sure. So a lot of common household everyday appliances that we use, wireless laptops, baby monitors, Wi-Fi routers, devices that we're exposed to on a daily basis, they're about an equivalent exposure level as an individual in their home or even out on the street would have from this facility being installed.
Yeah, I think you mentioned your calculations were to street level, is that correct?
That's correct.
You're also aware that this particular property is surrounded in some directions with both residential and commercial properties, correct?
Correct.
So how does your analysis relate to the interiors of those homes and businesses?
Well, on the inside of those homes and businesses, we would have the attenuating factor of the building material itself. But what I did do in the report is I also modeled exposure levels on the closest facilities, the closest buildings to the proposed pole. And that's on page 9 of the report. And the exposure percentages in terms of FCC standard are also given on that page. And none of them, it's kind of hard to read them, but none of them even approach close to 1% of the FCC standard. And that's assuming, again, 24/7, 365 exposure. Someone on one of those rooftops basically all day and all night with the maximum power from the antennas and the radios of the site, 24/7, 365. So even in that unlikely scenario, we're still compliant by a factor of over 100.
So based upon your calculations, can you tell the board whether or not the site would be fully compliant with the FCC's limitations?
It will be.
As a result of your analysis, have you reached a conclusion with regard to the safety of any emissions which would result should this application be approved?
The facility will be fully compliant with the FCC's guidelines when it comes to safety for the general public in areas near wireless facilities.
Are you also familiar with the Verizon Wireless radio frequency design for this site in and around Ocean City?
Yes, I am.
Can you tell the board and the public, if this application were to be approved, what type of service increases would citizens of Ocean City receive?
So there would be a significant increase in the ability of the network to deal with the approximately tenfold increase in population that the areas surrounding the site see during the summer months. There would also be some additional in-building coverage improvement in the surrounding buildings and residences, but it's mainly to address the capacity demand that we see in the summer months.
And when capacity stresses the system, what type of deficits could a typical user encounter?
So it'll begin with some sporadic issues when it comes to data requests. So if we're trying to send a text or download an attachment, or let's say use a FaceTime, or let's say watch something on our device. But when we have an area like this where we have such an influx of population, when it comes to those busy weekends or even during the summertime during the weeks, it would become a chronic issue, and I think we've all probably experienced it in the area where we have during busy summer weeks and weekends the inability to use our device for even casual phone calls and things like that that don't really consume a whole lot of data that it will amount to this chronic blocking situation.
And if this site were approved by the board, is it your testimony that those potential problems would be alleviated in and around the site?
Yes, thank you.
I have no further questions for Mr. Peterson.
Any board questions for the applicants?
Chairman, I can.
Yes, go ahead.
So, all right, just going back. So you said you did, I'm looking at the, I guess, page 8 and 7 and 8, where the surrounding structure. So those are with the height levels. Are the houses around them, or right close by you, the duplex about 20 to 30 feet in the air, and then some raised singles around there? But you're saying this is those the heights you used?
Yeah, so these are actually overestimated heights. I think, yeah, the elevation is 40 feet, you can see in the second column there.
Right.
I use that height as overestimated. So what the tool does is it does a spatial averaging at 40 feet. So it's basically from 40 to 46 feet. It takes a spatial average of that area.
So it's actually higher in the air, I guess, than what the houses are.
Correct.
The measurements. So
yeah, just
as you get further away, it becomes less.
Right, at ground level, just because of the way that the energy is directed from these antennas, and by virtue of the distance, where the antenna is 100 plus feet in the air, there is a decrease, generally speaking, at ground level. So in order to, again, overestimate the yield of power results, I use a higher height, or there's a safety factor involved in the height.
Okay. Just a question. I guess I'm looking more towards the future use. Obviously, it seems like, this is as a layman, the more G's phones have, it tends to require more boosters and things to be lower and closer together. So I guess looking in the future, there's 6 or 7 G's where now things are going to be lower on the pole because of that, because at least it seems like we're providing more boosters and things with the more technology, if that makes sense.
Are you asking if the antennas will become lower on
Correct.
This pole?
Yes.
I don't foresee that.
Obviously with the next technology, we don't know where it's going to end up, obviously. But it seems like, I guess around town, as technology becomes faster and quicker, there seems to be more boosters and things on top of poles that weren't there before, just because, my understanding, the higher G's have to be closer together to make it work better in a general term.
Well,
that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a loaded question because there's a little bit more to it.
Sure, than I understand.
Just
yeah.
the iterative, right. you know, the iterative technology improvements, the right. 3G to 4G, 4G to 5G.
Right.
There's also with the later technologies, there were also further FCC auctions, and those auctions tended to be higher in frequency. The higher frequencies cover less distance.
Right.
Well, so that really is why the site. So it's not so much the It's not entirely because of the iterative nature of the improvement of the technology.
Okay.
It also has to do with the frequencies that are being utilized, the higher frequencies, the 28 gigahertz and 37 and 39 gigahertz that have been recently auctioned. They don't cover that far. Mm-hmm. So to utilize them, the providers have started using another tool in our bag, which we do have here in Ocean City, which are small cells.
Right.
Installed on wood poles and other lower structures, and they are great for covering pretty stagnant traffic. Folks who are walking around out on the streets, which there's certainly plenty of here, but they're not great for covering into buildings and covering an umbrella of an area that we need here. We're looking to cover several blocks in any direction.
Right. So I guess, so you anticipate this pole, they will always be towards the top. You wouldn't ever see maybe a lower booster or however you want to use on the lower part of the pole. Now, we can predict the future.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know if you have any idea of what it could be 10 years from now. Are we still up high, or things you think are going to come down?
Tough to say 10 years from now, but I don't at least from where I stand now, yeah. I don't see Verizon lowering their antennas on this pole.
Okay.
Have you seen carriers lower antennas on a similar style monopole in your experience? Is that something that regularly happens?
Not regularly. Certainly not with, in this case, Verizon is proposing their antennas at 107 feet.
Okay.
There have been some sites over the years where we had some really tall sites up on, let's say, mountain ridges and things like that, where we've had to bring those down in height from, a 200-foot center line down to 100 feet because they were just covering too much area, which can create issues. But that is certainly not the case here. It couldn't be any more different. So I don't really see a scenario where the antennas come down in height. Could there be some additional antennas below? I guess potentially down the road. but right. I couldn't.
Okay.
I couldn't answer. I guess a little bit further on this. I mean, look at page C6. It shows center line of the COVID elevations, as you said, at 107. I mean, if it's approved tonight, is it fair to say that what's approved tonight would only be what's ever allowed to be done there without having to come back and say they could just go and put the antennas wherever they want on this monopole?
I think, correct. I think that's the problem we had to get forward. This is a unique situation for this board. We're not experts in that.
Yes, but I mean, you know, at the high elevation of 107 feet
right.
makes your report valid because that's how the measurements in the
case,
radiation or whatever you want to call it, it was measured.
Case in point, the bank building at 801. I remember when they went in for two units on top of that building. And look at it today.
Right. Well, I think that's sort of Mr. Allegato was asking, and it's a great point that he brought up. And, you know, just to clear it up a little bit, I think the concern maybe with this board is that if this gets approved, what's to prevent Verizon or others to put other antennas to the monopole that are lower than what this was approved at?
Yeah, I think any further applicants would need to come to the board. If the board were so inclined, I agree that the site plan is what's presented to this board. Should the board approve the site plan, that's what's approved. And, you know, anything further would require further application, either by Verizon or any new applicant that sought to co-locate. Our site engineer will also testify, as you're looking at the elevation drawings, you can see the city of Ocean City has proposed antennas on this plan. That would be inclusive of this plan, and they have at a higher elevation than Verizon. So Verizon, by virtue of their lease agreement with the city, could not go higher because that's reserved for the city. And again, Verizon, should the board approve the application, would agree that any further modification would require an amended site plan approval.
That makes sense, yes.
But it's my feeling.
I'm not going to go there. No.
What's just insurance that what's approved stays that way?
I know, but I mean, I'm looking at 801. You know, I don't think we've ever seen an application except the original one for 801.
Yeah, because it didn't come out.
I know. Yeah. Think about it. Whatever.
Does this have any impact on the airport safety zone or anything to do with the Ballard Airport? I know that's going to be improved in the future. Does this frequencies or anything interfere with any of that?
Not from a communications perspective. We will have to make application with the FAA.
Right.
To determine if the facility needs to be lit or marked, but from a communications perspective, no, there'll be no issue there.
Will there be any issue? Obviously, the city wants to co-locate their antennas. Will there be any issues with interference with local police, fire, EMS, on the basis of the frequencies that Verizon intends to locate?
No, that is a very common cohabitation between cellular carriers and emergency services.
What's the distance of spread on this?
As far as how far will it cover?
From whatever's being sent off that tower, how far away can you pick up on what's being sent off that tower?
Well, just because there are other sites kind of somewhat close by,
yeah,
you know, between the water tank to the south,
and
the temporary site up at the airport. I don't have a map here, but probably quarter to a half mile, depending on which way we're talking about.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any questions? Nope. You're off the hook.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you.
Sure. And then
where's a good spot for everybody
to stay? It's right. Oh, this is next to Mr. Athens, right?
Yeah, right there. There.
Perfect.
testimony you're about to give this board will be the truth.
Should we state your name?
Peter Albano, ALB.
Mr. Albano, can you please give the board the benefit of your education, experience, and the professional licenses you may hold?
I hold an undergraduate degree from Drexel University in architectural engineering with a focus in structural engineering. I've been in the industry since 2012. I hold a license for New Jersey and 16 other states. I've testified in front of boards like this dozens of times.
And the license that you hold, is that a licensed professional engineer?
That is correct.
And I'll offer Mr. Albano a capacity.
I can accept his credentials as spoken, and he can proceed.
Excuse me.
Thank you very much.
Are you with the firm?
Collier's Engineering.
Thank you.
And did you or members of your firm under your direction prepare the site plans which are before the board this evening?
Yes.
Can you describe the location of the site and the current existing conditions?
So the site is 3308 Bay Avenue, Ocean City, New Jersey. It's currently a vacant lot that is covered with gravel.
Can you describe to the board the proposed improvements?
Verizon is proposing to install a 115-foot monopole with a 10-foot lightning rod for overall 125 feet that has space for the city's antennas, as well as Verizon's. Verizon's proposing to install equipment at 117 feet within a fence compound, or 107 feet, sorry.
Thank you.
inside a 38-by-62-foot approximately compound that is fenced with a 6-foot-high chain link fence, surrounded by landscaping with an unapproved access drive into the compound.
Can you describe the antennas themselves, where and how they'll be located?
So the antennas are, they'll be attached to the monopole from a antenna mount. Could be a triangular platform mount or three sector frames, depending on how the design works out down the road once we put the analysis together to evaluate it.
And the plans that are before the board show a triangular mount with the antennas?
Yes.
And approximately how, what are the length of the antennas that are placed? As you indicated in your credentials, you indicated that you had a specialty in structural engineering. Can you talk to the board about how the foundation for the proposed monopole will be designed in this case?
So foundations are typically caissons. We will do a geotechnical evaluation to determine soil conditions and soil parameters to be able to design a full foundation to support the tower and all the appurtenances and all the equipment.
And you're familiar with this particular area, that there can be water table issues. How is that typically addressed?
So that's typically addressed by, in the geotechnical evaluation, we'll get recommendations for depth and size based on the site's specific conditions.
And were the board to approve the application, would the applicant be submitting a full structural report and analysis with its building permit?
Yes.
Can you please describe the location of the equipment cabinets and the equipment cabinets themselves?
So the equipment cabinets are ancillary equipment. They contain power and backup for the site in case there was an emergency, and that's how the site gets powered, as well as connects to the existing telecommunications infrastructure. They're located on a raised platform because of the floodplain. We obviously don't want anything in the floodplain to be able to damage the equipment, and it's not approved. So they'll be elevated on a steel frame.
What is the highest point of the equipment cabinets above grade?
So the top of the proposed canopy is 23.5 feet above grade. A of sea level, sorry, 10 half feet, or 18 feet.
Correct.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, in there.
To be clear, approximately 18 feet above grade.
Correct.
Okay. And you indicated that there is backup power. What is the backup power that's proposed here?
So we're proposing battery backup that'll be located in some of the cabins that are associated with the installation.
If power goes out, approximately how long does the battery backup work for?
It depends on the usage of the site, but it could be 8 to 12 plus hours.
Okay. The compound itself, as well as the proposed location for the monopole and the equipment, is that dictated by setbacks to existing wetlands?
Yes.
Okay. And is that shown on your plans?
Yes.
And what is the distance that's anticipated for the wetlands transition area or buffer?
It's 99.7.
And are you familiar with the applicant's wetlands application to DEP, and what is the status?
Yes, it's pending.
So that is still pending at this time?
Correct.
And based upon that buffer, let me ask you this question. Sure. Is it possible that the buffer amount that's shown on your plans gets reduced?
Yes, it is a possibility.
And if the buffer amounts were reduced, would the applicant agree to centering in the middle of the property as much as it can, the equipment compound, monopole, and equipment cabinets?
Yes.
So that application is pending. Are you also familiar with the CAFRA requirements for the area?
Yes.
Does this application require CAFRA approval?
It does not.
Why does it not?
Because it doesn't meet the development requirements for the residential or commercial sizes.
And is there also a significant distance involved as well from,
yes,
from the nearest resources?
Yes.
Are the equipment cabinets monitored remotely?
Yes.
And on a 24/7 basis?
Yes.
Is any lighting proposed here?
Yes, a work light is proposed to be able to be shined into the equipment, down into the equipment on a remote timer, on a twist lock timer, so that if it was, there was an issue at night, the tech could come in and see what they're working on and be able to work, and then it would time itself off and shut itself off, so there's no possibility of leaving the light on for hours on end.
And would the work light, would that be focused downward towards the equipment cabinets?
Yes.
Away from any residential buildings?
Yes.
And what is the wattage of the standard light?
About 70 watts.
And would the applicant agree to provide a detail of the proposed light on revised drawings?
Yes.
You mentioned a technician visiting the site. How often is the site visited?
We say every 4 to 6 weeks, but in reality, sites are remotely monitored and remotely evaluated now. They have a lot more control to be able to do things monitored, which we like to say, every 4 to 6 weeks.
So the tech, sorry.
And they'd be visiting in a sport utility type vehicle, nothing larger, anything that's of crazy size.
And where would they park that sport utility vehicle or small vehicle truck?
Right in front of the compound.
And what is the current ground condition in front of the compound?
It's currently all gravel.
In your opinion, as an engineer, does it need to be improved further to allow the access once every 4 to 6 weeks from the technician?
No.
Are there any drainage facilities that are required here?
No.
What utilities are required for the site to be operational?
Electric and telecommunication, whether it be fiber or coaxial cables.
And where would the applicant get that electric and telecommunications from?
It would be pulled off the existing utility pole that's just to the east of the site. Okay.
And would those utilities be run underground?
Yes.
So we're in a coastal area. I'm going to go back respect to your structural engineering and design engineering expertise, again, we're certainly in a coastal area. I'm from a coastal area as well, and we're familiar with the potential for hurricanes, northeasters, other strong storms. How is this particular monopole designed in order to withstand the type of storms that we can have in this area?
So the building code that's set forth by New Jersey dictates what the version of ASCE, which is the loading that we are determined to use, also as well as the TIA 222H, which is what has been adopted by the state of New Jersey. TIA 222 is very specific to telecommunication structures, and it evaluates the wind speeds, the different conditions for what towers are to be. It's very stringent. They have safety factors in there to make sure that we are meeting the performance standards.
You also mentioned that there would be a lightning rod atop the monopole. Is that correct?
Correct.
How does the lightning suppression system work for this particular site?
So the carriers don't want to replace their equipment when lightning strikes, because lightning is going to strike the tallest object and find the least path, the least resistance to the ground. So the intention is to bring the lightning down to the ground and dissipate it into the ground through a grounding ring that is designed to support the structure.
Mr. Peterson, just for one moment to answer the antenna design question. You heard the question that was posed earlier about the length of the antennas that are intended to be affixed to the top of the monitor on the horizon.
I did.
Can you describe those antennas to the board? How big are they?
Sure. There's going to be 9 total, 6 of which will be 72 inches, so 6 feet long, and then the other 3 are 30 inches.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the clarification. In your professional experience, are there any engineering concerns that this board should be aware of with regard to the site plan that's proposed before the board this evening?
No.
I have no further questions for Mr. Albano. However, I know that the board's professionals did prepare reports, were prepared to address the engineering concerns in those reports. I'm happy to go through them right now, or wait, as I know, your procedure till the end.
You can roll call our professional and you can counter-react with them at whatever point. Anybody have any questions for this?
I do.
Neil from Drexel.
I do.
Yes.
Okay. So just review. So how, I guess, from the ground level, the battery structure, how high is that total going to be?
It's 18. So the
equipment is 6 feet, and then that would be 18 feet.
The top of the equipment. We have a canopy that covers it.
Okay.
That'll be 18 feet.
So from the street, you'll be seeing the fencing. You see a couple of trees around there, so you might see some of that canopy peeking out.
Yes.
Just visually.
Yes.
Okay. And then, I guess, reviewing where the location, you said, it's based on estimates we think it might have to be. Mm-hmm. But it could go, obviously, we all anticipate probably being a little further south. Not close to residential. So we're waiting to see our final location depending on the approvals from the state.
That's correct. And the applicant will stipulate, based upon our lease agreement with the city, that we could not move the monopole or equipment any closer to the residential property lines without coming back to this board for additional approval. Again, we could, if this board permits us to, center it in the property if we have that flexibility from the DEP.
For the DEP, right.
Which is consistent with your ordinance. And our planner will testify as to your wireless ordinance, but your ordinance has a condition that the monopole and equipment should be located as close as possible to the center of the property,
right.
Taking into consideration any setbacks that are required from outside agencies. So it contemplates this type of scenario.
Okay, so we can't ignore the DEP? Is that what you're talking about?
We can't ignore the DEP. The application is still pending. The city is working, and your city attorney who was here earlier is working with the applicants on those particular applications, because obviously the city is the owner of the property. So those applications go in stages. And in fact, I know some of the paperwork is currently sitting on my desk.
Okay, very good. The last question, I probably going to seem trivial. So you said you're going to have a light on the property at all times?
No.
No.
So the light will be on the equipment platform that we are proposing to install, and it will be shined into our equipment, down, like facing down, so that if a tech was to come work at night, they would be able to have a light to work on.
So it'll just be turned on if somebody's work, their work.
Yes.
It's not all the time.
Correct.
Right. So I didn't know if we got a night light like we have on our poles, because if there was, I was going to press a certain time of light so it's not too bright, because that's a major complaint with the new lights they're putting around town, so I'm trying to avoid that.
Like you said, for any time, so that guy, the technician comes in, he turns.
Right, I understand. I just want to make sure it's all clear, so when people ask, is the light going up?
It's a very, very
night, like a night light, or what exactly is that? So.
Yeah, it's a very, very common request, and it's seen by Verizon in every single site at every municipality, which is why they put them on the twist timer, so even if the technician were to get the light, it automatically turns off.
Okay, great, thank you very much. That's all I had.
Any other questions from seeing none?
Okay.
You swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give to this board will be the truth?
I do.
Please state your name.
It's Paul Ricci, R-I-C-C-I.
Mr. Ricci, can you please give the board the benefit of your education, professional experience, and the licenses you may hold?
Yes, I'm a licensed professional planner since the year 2000, also a member of the American Institute of Certified Planners. I have a master's degree in city and regional planning from Rutgers University, which I received in 1997. I've been licensed since the year 2000. I'm currently a municipal planning consultant in 7 communities. I've testified on numerous wireless applications over the years. I would estimate around 100 wireless applications. I've been qualified throughout the state, every county, upwards of 250 boards. I have testified in Ocean City on some of the temporary wireless applications closer to the beach several years ago as well. I'm not sure if it was this board, but I have been in attendance.
I'll offer Mr. Ricci as a licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey.
And we can accept that.
Okay. And the board secretary would like to know which firm you're with.
I'm self-employed, Ricci Planning LLC.
Thank you.
Mr. Ricci, are you familiar with the zoning ordinances and the master plan of the city of Ocean City?
Yes, I've reviewed those documents.
Can you please describe, from a planning perspective, the property in the surrounding area?
Sure. We're in your RL150 district. From a zoning perspective, you have underlying residential standards as well as conditional use standards specifically for wireless telecommunications. I'll touch upon those more in a second. The area itself, I would characterize it largely residential. Across the street, there's some commercial influences, a motel, a building under construction, and the like. We are at the, I guess I would call it one of the main egress areas of the city, just off that major, where that egress connects with 34th Street. So it's a fairly central location into the city as well.
Have you reviewed the application, and can you provide a planning opinion on what's proposed before the meeting?
Sure. From a planning perspective, it's not common for me to be always testifying when there are no variances involved. Clearly, there's some history associated with this project. The city has prepared an ordinance, section 25208.2.6.2, which has established approximately 12 or so conditional use criteria, which regulates wireless telecommunications facilities in the city. Being paramount, that when a facility is located on a city property, it is permitted conditional use throughout the city, subject to those standards. I did review your planner's letter. Your planner has confirmed that we comply with all those standards. I've looked at those standards. I agree with your planner's assessment. I can go through those if you'd like, but I think there's no conflict as to compliance with those standards.
So is your testimony that the application requires no variances and that each of the conditional use standards established in the wireless ordinance are met in this case.
That's correct.
Would the board like Mr. Rickey to go through each of the standards to address them, or are we satisfied that his testimony is that there are no variances?
I think that we're comfortable with that.
Okay. So.
I'm going to go through it anyway.
Understood. And in that case, Mr. Rickey, you testified earlier that you're often called in to do the type of planning testimony when a variance is required, and in those cases you would balance the positive and negative criteria, and you would talk about the purposes of the municipal land use law, which is turning 50 years old this year, 1976. However, in this case, we've indicated that there are no variances. Nevertheless, could you maybe address some of the positives that could occur from a planning perspective with the board to specifically?
Sure. I think the board recognizes that the issuance of the FCC generally establishes that the use promotes the public good, the general welfare of the community. That's namely because individuals have the ability to have access to prompt, reliable information, family interactions. The data suggests that over 80% of E911 calls is associated from wireless phones, and over time, the number of people that just rely on wireless phones as their only form of communication, the landline, is relatively, I think at this point in time, if you're a family with a child in the house, it's less than 20% of the households actually still has a landline. So that makes it even more important for there to be robust service to communities, especially at a place like Ocean City. I live up in Monmouth County, close to the Sea Bike Beach. My phone doesn't work during beach time hours. Anytime there's a storm or anything, it didn't exist for after Superstorm Sandy. So, clearly in coastal areas, the importance of that robust service is clearly important as well.
I have no further questions for Mr. Rick.
Any questions from the board at this point?
I have a question.
Yes, Jamie has a question.
Is Food Town still in Seabright?
Excuse me?
Food Town? I grew up on Center Street.
Right behind the Food Town. In Atlantic Highlands, there's a small supermarket that's Seabright. I don't even know what the name is, like a mom and pop, okay. That's kind of next to the pizzeria there. That's kind of by Donovan's over there.
Yeah.
That's not a Food Town anymore.
No, that was a long time ago. Well, not that long. I'm only waiting on the ones, right? That was it.
Any other questions? The application.
That's it.
Yeah, it's okay. We're good.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chair, that was my final witness. I'm certainly happy to answer questions.
Any questions to the applicant before we go to our professional? Nope. At this point, I'd like to take Randy Schull, our planner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll reference my report, date of March 18, 2026, and then have the opportunity to review the application at the subcommittee meeting back on March 24th. Unusual application in that we're in a residential zone, permitting a cell tower, but that's the way it's worked its way through, and you have an explanation as to why. We are where we are with this application, so I'm going to skip over the development proposal. I'm going to get ready for my fitness review on page 4. Review for a minor site plan compliance. There were two items we did not see on the initial submission. The applicant requested a waiver for the date on the survey. I had no issue with granting a waiver on that one. There was a question about the title block information. The applicant agreed to address that as a condition of approval. We would see that cleaned up on the final plan, as well as any square footage and percentage of site in unoccupied open space. That would all be taken care of on the perfected plan. So the application was deemed complete.
With regard to your on page 4,
yeah.
Your number 5B and 5H, that being floor area and square footage, I believe at the March 24th subcommittee meeting, you indicated that those are not applicable.
That's correct. 5B and A should be discarded.
Thank you very much for that clarification.
No problem. Is there any schedule on page 5 laying out the metrics for the lot requirements for the site plan related improvements? You can see they're all in conformance with the requirements. Page 6 and 7, we get into the conditions in the ordinance for reference for wires, communication tower, antenna, conditional use requirements. First one had to do with lighting. We've had some clarification on the lighting being proposed. See no issue with that. The tower height is in conformance with what the ordinance permits, as is the accessory structure. The equipment cabinets are all in conformance with the allowable height. The tower equipment platform and other related equipment, there's a wire mesh galvanized chain link fence proposed. We've seen similar applications for utilities in proximity to the street, as this one is, where the board has looked for a more concealed type of fence. So at the very least, the wire mesh, I think, would need to be blackened, black vinyl coated, or the board may want to consider a more decorative fence. And to me, especially if the site, the way it's laid out, is pushed closer to the street, the way it's shown on the plan, a decorative fence might be more appealing than just thinking of people driving by. So that's something the board can consider. Also had a question or a concern about the American Arborvitae landscaping. Again, the same idea. American Arborvitae is not native to the area. There will be no irrigation proposed. So we discussed at the subcommittee meeting getting some indigenous plantings in with more variety to them. It would also provide the adequate screening. So I believe the applicant agreed at the subcommittee to work with us on that as conditional approval. But I think the critical question would be the fence. If the board wants to see a different type of fence, you should make that known. The landscaping, we can deal with it on our own. The fence, in the middle of page 7, the fence area surrounding should be centered. That's pushed toward Bay Avenue more than it would otherwise be because of the wetlands buffer that's being proposed. The applicant has agreed if the LOI comes back and they're able to shift it back, they will do that. They will center it. So I don't have an issue with that. I don't know if the board would be inclined to, would be more inclined to approve some relief and keep it closer to the street, further away from the residential or not. So I don't know if that's what Mr. Alvarado's question was about or not. So kick that around a little bit. I've had no issue with granting whatever relief would be required from that standard if the board thought that that was more appropriate for this location to separate this further from the residential. Impervious coverage, no question about, or no issue with that. Jump right past that one. I did see the width of the driveway, but apparently the entire site is gravel. So there's really no delineation for the driveway itself. Over to page 8, that's really the end of the conditional use requirements. The additional comments I had on page 8. The first one has been addressed by the applicant. They've verified that at the subcommittee. They require a waiver, as I indicated, for the irrigation from 25-1738.12. Because there's no water at the site. Reinforced concrete apron was discussed. I'm not sure what the upshot of that was. The engineer may have more to say about that, so I'm going to basically defer that at this point, as I did at the subcommittee. The zoning schedule, as a condition of approval, the zoning schedule and the plan should be revised, as I've indicated in comment number 4. And then I would defer all of the site breaks, stormwater utilities, and drainage to the board engineer. I don't have any other significant comments. The conditions of approval below on page 8 are pretty much standard fare. If there are any questions from the board, I'd be happy to answer them.
Board questions for Mr. Schul or anyone?
Yeah, I didn't see it anywhere here. The current proposed, or rather, the proposed fencing is what?
It's a galvanized chain link. So it's not going to be very discreet. Okay. It's more industrial looking. I'm suggesting at least black vinyl coated if they're going to keep a chain link, or require some sort of decorative fence, black as well.
On Z5, it shows a double fence being screened by additional landscaping. Is that not?
Yeah, and I guess the question, I'll leave this to the applicant as far as the operations of the site, but sometimes the landscaping can be too obscure. In other words, if somebody were to jump the fence and get inside, you wouldn't be able to see them. So I don't know if that needs some more thought. I'm not the applicant. I don't know if they have a concern with security on the site or not, but in other locations and other sites, I've seen that being an issue where there's too much of a screen around the property. If somebody gets in, you don't see them. I'm just throwing that out there. At the very least, I think the front of the site should be enhanced somehow. I'm not really as worried about the back. But from the streetscape, I'd like to see something different than what we have in front of us.
So the applicant would agree to the black vinyl as you recommended.
Would you, water company just redid their transfer station and they used a black wrought iron?
Again, it's supposed to be behind screening and new landscaping. So I can talk to the client as to what fencing is recommended, but based upon the subcommittee meeting and the recommendations of the planner, we would agree to do the black vinyl behind the new landscaping.
This is standard to 4 foot, correct?
Six foot.
It's probably not wrong. I think, is it black aluminum maybe? We're talking about?
Yeah, it's about triple cost.
Right.
I kind of have to agree with what Mr. Schul said, but I also think this is in a neighborhood. There's an alley behind it. There's houses behind it. So I think that whatever the landscaping is, and we didn't get into great detail on this, but I think rather than just a narrow bed that goes around the compound, maybe a diversified, breakdown of the shape of the beds so that it's not so commercial, industrial looking.
Well, with regard to the landscaping, arborvitae was proposed.
Yeah, and that's
and understood.
Not the best product in the world.
So we understand the comments with regard to that. And the recommendation was for a mix of Eastern Red Cedar, Leland Cypress, American Holly, and Inkberry Holly, and the applicant would agree to that.
I think the arborvitae height, it's a consistent tree line height that they do get that height. And
well, they go, combine that they go height, higher.
Or higher. But if you look at Z5, if it's done the way it's drawn, you're not going to even see a fence there. But
how tall does that Leyland cypress and those other plants get? Do we know?
They get substantial height to American arborvitaes. I mean, they'll be 25, 30 feet high.
So will the Leyland cypress.
They're not salt tolerant.
Yes.
And they'll die. They're not salt tolerant. They'll die. Well, go to West 17th Street around the pump station. We're having to replace all those. The pump station on the arborvitae.
Oh, yeah. So the arborvitae one was probably with these red cypress and Leyland cypress were these.
I don't know if they're on the environmental. There's a list that the Environmental Commission has that are the preferred salt tolerant.
I think there's actually even a list in our ordinance that talks about some of those as well. So, I mean, I think it's appropriate to get something that's suitable to the neighborhood and the environment.
It floods there. That's the only reason.
Well, that's another issue too. I mean, if there's no water on the property, if it floods, that doesn't help you any, because usually after a flood, if you inundate with fresh water, you can save pretty much anything that's there, including your lawn. But there's no water on this property, so I think that's going to take a little research to come up with what really is going to fit in there.
Yeah,
And it's stuff I didn't think about at the subcommittee, because it just came in sort of cut and dry. But the more I thought about it.
I think the landscape is important, it's just a little covered. And,
who do we go to for that?
What's that?
The landscaping for this, I think, is the important part of it, of what you're going to see. You want to go look up at the tower and see what's up. You know, I'm not a landscaper. You know, I know nothing about landscape other than I have grass growing in my yard.
Now, that landscape board, the shade tree coming, I don't know if that's something we use them to receive resources.
Yeah, we got a report from them.
Yeah.
But they don't do landscape.
Right, that's true. So I think we could ask an opinion on
that. Randy, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I guess it could work this way. If the board makes it clear what you want to see, you can flip it to the applicant, have them come back with something and see if it's suitable or not, and we could take a look at it. But. Or else I could help design something or put some ideas together on what conceptually would work better here. But it really depends on what the board wants to see.
I mean, it's a good point. If you have no water, that can be a problem.
Yep.
I don't see how it's going to grow, personally. But.
So my understanding is, and we can have our engineer testify to the plantings, is that... on initial planting, there are water bags that are placed around each and every tree. They're staked as they need to be.
Sure.
They do water bags on it, but yeah, there's no on-site water.
There's water running right down the street. You can't add water into the site.
Yeah, I mean, the water company sites in town look like little houses and have lawns, and you know what I mean. Yeah. But I'm just saying, when you say utilities, I mean, you can see those around town, whatever. I don't know. I don't want this to stop anything.
To run a service line and irrigation system in this would be the cheapest part of this whole project. It's not really there.
So what's the rest of the site around the perimeter of the landscaping going to be? Is that going to be gravel or?
Yeah, there is. Well, I'm not supposed to testify because I'm the attorney. Why don't we have our engineer come back up? You put a microphone in front of the attorney and they talk.
It's not really gravel, it's millings from the asphalt. Because it was flooding and the mosquitoes. So we did it just to shed the water when we were building the two new houses to the north.
Okay.
And that's what you're going to leave?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you can see on sheet Z5, which is mounted, the landscaping, obviously you can see around the proposed compound. It does take up a good portion of the property. I mean, it's eastern portion of the property that it really takes up the remainder of the property. Well, can you describe the remainder of the property?
Yeah, so the remainder of the property basically to the south general location is all the millings, the existing open area that's there, and then further down past the edge of the property it's all
Phragmites.
Yeah.
It's, you know, wooded and shrubs in that area, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Anybody have questions for Randy Shull?
I just have one additional off the landscape.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you mentioned about the the setback. You said we could.
Yeah.
You recommend maybe doing further setback than where it is now, or I'm sure I'm misunderstood.
Well, the ordinance requires the compound to be centered on the property.
Correct.
Which currently isn't because of
what's
anticipated as far as the wetlands buffer.
Right.
The applicant has agreed if the wetlands buffer comes back something less anticipated,
right,
that they will shift it and center it as much as they can.
Okay.
Which is what the ordinance requires.
Right. Yeah, but I thought you said maybe we could weigh something now.
Yeah, but my thought was if you're inclined, I'm just saying you, the board, is inclined to enhance or increase the separation of this compound from the residences back here, then you could waive or grant relief for that centering aspect of it and let them keep it where they have it.
Gotcha. Okay.
But without an affirmative relief from you, they would be required to move it back if they're buffered.
It's allowed by DEP when they make
the decision. We don't even know what the actual building we know what the size of the footprint is, but we don't know where it's going to.
Well, you don't know what the buffer's going to be.
Yeah,
you don't know how far they're going to get pushed.
DEP and everybody else.
Okay.
Okay, that's simple enough. Any other questions? If not, I'm going to go to Mr. Scheidick.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
Is that
making
the trees?
The sheet trees.
Clarify that the city owns the curb, the sidewalk, if there is, and all of that. And if the city, it's not their responsibility to.
The police here.
Yeah, it's the city's responsibility for the curb and the sidewalk.
Okay.
And we don't even know what the county's. Do we hear from the county?
We've not heard from the county yet. That application was filed. Unfortunately, we have not heard from the county yet. That application was filed at the same time that this happened.
This all the time. I'd like to go to Mr. Scheidick at this point.
Thank you, Chairman. Our report was March 19th. I think all the completeness items in my report and the zoning chart for this residential lagoon one family is all consistent with what's been testified to this evening and Randy's report. So I'm just going to jump into some of my technical comments. Technical comment number one on page 3, we'd like to see site grading provided on the plans. We're awful close to that neighboring property to the north. That's a little lower than the site, so we'd like to see the watershed out to Bay Avenue, or at least see what's proposed for site grading. There's nothing proposed right now.
It's supposed to shed 50% to the alley, 50% to Bay Avenue.
So we'd like to see that on the site grading plan.
Yes.
This second one, I had a question what the proposed treatment of the ground surface was going to be, meaning outside of the lease area, just like you spoke of. Does the world end at the lease area for this application? Right, we're hearing everything about the lease area and then the landscaping and then the fence and the monopole and all the accessory stuff, but what's happening with the rest of the site? So I wanted to know what was going on with the rest of the site. I wanted to know what was going on with that new curb and sidewalk and driveway, because typically any development on a lot requires new curb and new sidewalk and new driveway apron, and it's in extremely poor condition, sidewalk, apron, everything. So I wanted to bring that up for the board to consider. I don't know that I got an answer for this, considering it's a lease area, but it should be a topic for discussion. We heard testimony that, you know, some of these items in my report have been addressed. The mechanical equipment meets flood elevation. There'll be no signage. We've heard that the landscaping may be amended from what's approved. There's no real lighting other than a worker light that goes off. And also there should be some bonding required for perimeter buffer, so that can be inspected and made sure it's in place prior to CL, and some kind of maintenance that goes along with that, that follows a performance bond, to make sure that this landscaping is in fact at least there for 2 years after completion. So those are my items.
Any questions from Mr. Scheidick from the board? This is the first time I've had to deal with a lease on city property like this. I don't know who controls the sidewalk and the curb, and you know, I mean.
Those are excellent questions, Mr. Looper.
you're sitting in the catbird seat. I'm sorry.
And the complicated, it's county road.
And the complicated, it's on a county road, and who knows what the county engineer is going to say about it.
and there's an alley behind it.
It's only this agreement between the city and the applicant
right.
for some of this stuff, but I don't.
Okay,
I'm
we don't.
I'm not sure. So.
We don't know.
The way I see it, it's like a tenant fit up, right? So I own a building, and it's a retail building. And picking a company, one company wants to put the store in there. Well, we agree we'll lease it, come out, and term, and they come in and they, at their expense, fit it out how they need to operate their business. That's no different here. It's
yeah.
just thinking of leasing the ground and they're fitting it out to. Spending a lot of money putting in foundation and 125 foot pole and all the other electrical things and all the other construction things that go along with it. Part of it is a fence and landscaping, and the landscaping isn't necessarily a component of the of what's going on here. It's more of a static thing to say to a board like us, hey, we know we're putting this rather industrial, ugly looking thing in a residential neighborhood, so we're going to put a fence and we're going to put a landscape thing and trees and everything else. So in my view, if they're coming to us for approval and we have to feel good about approving something, even though there are no variances in a residential neighborhood, then I think we have a right to say we want to see it landscaped nicely, but also ensure that it's going to live and stay and be maintained. Which means the addition of an irrigation system. Because if you don't do that, it's not going to be the same to maintain it. If there are, what you just said, with these bonds and other things that ensure that this stuff happens, that a little bit of insurance to run a water line in there, an irrigation system for $5,000 or $8,000 is not unreasonable, I think.
Oh, and talking about the bags, that's awesome.
Somebody's got to fill the bag once a week.
Correct.
So you go through a summer with no rain for 6 weeks.
Yeah. So
you go through a flood and wipe it all out, and they're planting new stuff every day.
Yeah. But even the bags, you like pictured, you're all landscaped, you're done, but then you have this lot that's the rest of it's just rough. I don't see an access point, and then you hit the curb impression there, and now it's all broke up. Demo of the old building. So you got a real nice thing, you landscape, you got a big centerpiece, and then everything around it looks just like a leftover construction site, you know?
And that's a good point. What's going to look like after construction?
Right.
Right? This is a pretty intense construction site, right?
So picked a lot of my concerns up.
You're exactly right. So, I mean, it may look bad now, but it may look a whole lot worse after construction. Right.
That corner is finally going to maybe start getting cleaned up.
And it is a gateway corner, which across the street there's going to be a brand new building eventually, soon.
That hotel is most likely coming down.
Yeah, the hotel across the street.
I agree with the arborvitae. You know, they're tough to keep alive. We use them a lot. I use them a lot in my with development stuff that I do, only because they are tall, they are full, they do fit the bill of what they're trying to achieve here, but if they're properly maintained and watered, and maybe you might have to replace one or so every now and then, it's gonna do what's intended, which is create a green barrier around this that conceals it.
The green giant that's a lot stronger plant can deal with it.
Yeah, there are other species that
right.
You know can reduce, but
Mr. Schiller had a good tree selection.
Why do we get involved in landscape? Well, we can does the applicant have any thoughts?
I'll leave it at this. I like what I see here, and I'm okay with this. But I want to stay this way. Not be dead in 6 months or 6 weeks or gone.
I'd like to see it softer, because you're going to have these columns of trees, you want something that maybe tapers out from it, and that'll help the nastiness of
the
lot.
It ultimately becomes a hedge, and that's what you want. Now,
yeah.
I'm not saying you can't put other stuff around it, but soften it up.
But it would be nice to...
It would. If you want to
do it's a meter.
I don't know how far you want to push it.
Well, it's stuff I didn't think about in the subcommittee, but the more I look at this, you know, I mean, I don't need an alligator alley on 34th Street.
I just assume that there's a water meter there, and it's not going to be water meter on either a Bay Avenue or the alley. It's very similar to a water main service for irrigation only.
Any feedback?
Well, if the board were to require an irrigation system to run a new line in, that would be owned and maintained by the city. That ultimately, you know, Verizon is a lessee of the property. So that's something that the city would have to consider and consent to in order to do that. As far as the plantings are concerned, we are certainly amenable to what was proposed originally. We are also amenable to the plantings, including the Leland cypress, any type of salt-resistant plantings that your planner recommended. You know, the applicant proposed over 40 different plantings here, and you know, I have Leland cypress at my house. They can grow pretty large. They don't grow exactly in the same type of wall as the arborvitae typically, but I'm not a landscape professional either.
None of us
but, again, you know, we're certainly amenable to putting in the salt-resistant plants. There are parts of New Jersey where the applicant agrees to put in deer-resistant plants. I mean, there's certain things that you have to account for in each county that are different.
So as it relates to utilities, I mean, there's existing electrical telephone service here, which is required for this facility to run. I mean, who pays for that? City or Verizon, the lessee?
We need to get a copy of the lease.
How would water be any different?
I don't think it would be any different, but, you know, we're here to settle our lawsuit, too.
Right. Yeah, I don't believe that irrigation or water is part of the settlement agreement, at least from live like that. So, yeah, it's an additional ask that we're doing. So, but we can certainly, if that's the bullet board.
Well,
yeah, it almost seems to me if you're not going to get irrigation, I think what I'm hearing here is you're not going to have survivability of anything you plant, which pushes you more, in my mind, into getting a better fence and just leave it at that and grant the applicant relief on the landscaping part of it. I don't know if you're going to have survivability if you don't have irrigation on the site, and that's not going to be an easy ask, it doesn't seem like to me. But it's very atypical application where we can't get more of what we want. Or more of what we need.
Then if we're back to a fence, what are we...
Well, I think what Vince said, what I was alluding to, was you get beyond the chain link altogether and you get that decorative thing. Tarek said something about it. And we've seen it on some of the other corner properties where utilities have gone in with that decorative aluminum black, it looks like it's architectural.
Yeah,
it's designed
like a
fence.
Iron fence, but it's aluminum.
Which would help. It doesn't do what landscaping does, but it would be better than chain link and better than dead plants out here.
How about grasses? They seem to do the grasses we have in the marshes.
They'll live with little water, but they don't get soaked. So,
the other problem, I've had grasses, and the problem with the grasses is that if you don't maintain them every year, you have a total mess on your hands.
Right.
You know, so you want something that's going to be semi-maintenance free in this scenario. You know, and I just don't know the grasses are the answer to that.
Agreed.
That's not allowed.
I think that requires a variance.
That's why everybody was laughing when he said bamboo. Yeah, it's like, forget it.
That'll hide it.
No. I mean, I think certainly as a city, we want to see it look like a nice property. It's how do we accomplish that?
Well, that's it. I'm kind of at a stalemate here. I don't know how you accomplish that.
Is the fence on the property line?
No, it's not.
It's set in?
Correct.
It's okay. Correct. Not from the property line of the property itself, of the leased area.
Correct.
It's like on the front of the landscape.
I believe it's on the border
inside.
Of the
leased area. It's on page 25.
It's on
There's a border that has the lease area, there's trees in it, the fence is on the inside of that.
I mean, if it's city property, I would imagine it'd be maintained by the city.
Well, it's not. It's in the lease area.
Oh, it's
the fence is in the lease area.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, the applicant would be maintaining the fence, and, you know, frankly, it's Verizon's understanding that the property is in this condition now due to the construction of the adjacent properties, and it would be unexpected that it would be maintained by the city with just tailings in the future.
I don't think we should allow it to slow this process down any.
No, I agree. I want to move it forward, but I.
So with the sidewalks, where do we land with that? That's the city.
It is a county road, though.
Oh, it's county road.
Yeah.
County road. They're the city sidewalks.
We often require curb sidewalk along county roads.
Permanent.
Can't get approval because it's part of our ordinance for any development on all frontages.
And you mentioned your client will be, you think he may be amenable to the city maintaining an irrigation system?
It would, the city would have to consent to have that. So the applicant, the city put out a public bid for this work. The applicant won the bid. The bid has bid specifications in it that describe what the city wants, including the location for the city antennas, the city equipment. There's nothing in the bid with regard to providing any additional landscaping across the property or additional irrigation or curbing or sidewalk or any other improvements. So when the applicant won the bid to construct the facility, it's limited to what's shown in the plan here. So if the board were to require something different than that, then the applicant would have to go back to the city and say, this is what has been required by the board. Do you agree? Do you consent? And then there has to be some conversation about who pays for the improvements and who maintains the improvements that are outside of what's shown here.
Well, can we get a motion that can sort of have a floating envelope for the building?
We're not open to public.
Well, I'm just trying to get some groundwork here, so when I open up to the public, there might not be as many questions.
So the
we don't know where the you know, if the EPA says it's less, you know, and they can move it, you know, and following Randy's suggestion, pulling it off the alley. You know, so it's less intrusive into the neighborhood.
Right, they'll leave it where it is now.
As far as the location of the improvement for the pole and everything, the motion would be, in the affirmative for the location of the monopole in the fenced-in area would be centered in the lot as best as possible based upon the DEP.
That's
requirements
fine.
For a buffer for wetlands.
Okay, that's fine.
So on that note, when are you anticipating?
I have a question. Does that mean it can move left and right on the site? Or are we only talking about it moving between the street and the alley?
I think we're talking about moving
street
east
and
north and south.
North and south, right.
Because the wetlands are right there.
Essentially located relative to the front and rear property lines.
Front rear. So it's not going to move over to the left of the property, or the left of the paper. It's going to stay there. Is that what you're saying?
If you're looking
I'm not saying that.
No, is that what you're saying? That's what you're saying between the front and rear property.
Well, the front and rear property is this and this, and it's too close to the front now because of the supposed buffer.
Understood. So it's only going to go move east and west.
Well, I thought it could move east and south, too. Because depending on the line is over here, so if the line is further back here, then the whole thing would be shifting.
Yeah, I'm under the impression you can move north, south, east, west, just providing what the EPA tells
you. So then my question is, what is the lease say?
The lease is consistent with the ordinance. And
okay.
What the ordinance says is, skip ahead.
Centrally located on the lot relative to the front and rear property lines.
And as far as possible.
Equidistant from the front and rear property lines and as far as possible from residential development.
Right. Taking into consideration.
The goal is to get further away from the residential.
Yeah. Right. So you're trying to save space for public works at all.
I think the thought process of improvement is to get it away from the residential as much as possible. So I think that's why.
So it can move both.
That one's pretty well shot.
Well, yes and no. When are you anticipating to construct this as soon as possible, or are we going to have to wait for what the DEP says?
We're waiting for DEP. So this would be, as most applications are, subject to any required outside approval, including county approval, DEP approval. And DEP moves as quickly as the state. And I say that lovingly as a former state employee.
And before we open it up to the public, one question I had at the subcommittee was, did we talk to the FAA about the height of this tower and the runway pattern?
That is pending.
That's pending also.
So it would be subject to FAA approval as well.
Right.
Okay. They could.
Yeah, I know.
So it depends upon the distance to the runways, the types of planes that are allowed to land on those runways, and the circulation pattern and the height.
Sure.
So we have jets coming into that airport at this point.
Do you really?
Yes.
Small
jets. Small jets. Private jets.
Right next to the little golf course area?
Yeah. Small jets.
Wow. Okay.
So I have a question for Randy and Dave then. Will the revised plans will wait until DEP responds, the county responds?
And FAA.
Right? I mean, Okay.
Right, because if the DEP goes back with a 50-foot buffer.
Right.
Then this whole thing could be moved substantially.
Okay. So we want to see all that with the other conditions of approval revisions, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Now, at this point, if you're at rest, I would like to open this up to the public just to see what kind of comment I get.
Of course.
For all practical purposes, we're at 3308 Bay Avenue. Anybody from the public? Let's open it up to the public.
Yes.
Wait a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 3308, anybody from the public want to say something? Step forward at this time. Come forward.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give to this board will be the truth?
Yes.
Please state your name and address.
So it's Mary Ann Brewer, B-R-E-W-E-R. And you're filming me. Just because I do that to you guys. Okay. I'm getting red now. I've lost my train of thought.
Address.
So I live at 308 6th Street. I just have a general question. I'm curious about the, I don't know, are they duplexes or townhomes that are right there where the lot is?
There's two duplexes right there.
Okay, so that lot, do they park there?
No.
They don't?
No.
Not legally.
Not legally? Because I didn't know if they were year-round or if they, you know.
That's private property. They may park there, but not legally.
I just didn't know, you know. If they park there, how big is this fence and landscaping going to be?
They have no right to be.
But they have no rights, or they have to park in the street?
No, they have parking.
It's entire new buildings have.
New buildings have parking.
There's an alley on the back end, and they're parking.
Oh, I didn't know that, because all I see is the front. I don't know in the back, because I don't want people to look at it. I don't know back there.
They have garages and parking, just like everybody
else. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know they had things, you know, in the back. Just curious, because I know people are going to ask me online. So.
They're relatively new buildings, which have all the required parking as any other new building has
back there. That's good to know, because I know people are going to ask me online. So, But thank you very much.
Sure.
Anyone else from the public have any comment? Please come forward at this point. Seeing no additional, do I have a motion to close the public? Do I have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Back to the applicant for closing.
Thank you. you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for paying attention to us. I think there are probably a number of conditions subject to, you know, approval subject to conditions that the applicant would consent to. Obviously, the outside approvals we discussed, the technical revisions to the drawings and revisions to the drawings after or should any further movement of this of the site, the lease area within the site occur. So the applicant's certainly willing to consent to those items. We indicated that we would consent to the recommendations of your planner with regard to specific plantings that are in his report, as well as to his recommendation for black vinyl chain on the chain link fence. And the applicant would consent to those conditions as well. So you heard from our planner that no variances are requested, that the site is otherwise fully compliant with the ordinance. And on that basis, we would ask you to consider granting this application for minor site plan and conditional use approval. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I have a motion in the affirmative for approval of occupancy application for minor site plan approval, conditional use approval, and waivers for the plat requirements specified in the professional reports and subject to the conditions consented to by the applicant this evening.
Based on what we've heard from our solicitor, do I have a motion?
Shepherd.
Do I have a second? Roll call.
Okay, usually, first, like, with some discussion first, just so
yeah,
I can
go ahead.
So, I guess, was there everybody's concerns with the fence and landscaping addressed? It seems like kind of left that hanging out there.
The fence.
Oh, because there's different suggestions.
Yeah.
That I think, you know.
Randy's going to handle the landscaping. You know, what can go there, the salt tolerance.
So we all understand that's part of the resolution that we're voting.
Yes.
And the irrigation?
Or
no?
We can't do irrigation.
No. Okay.
I mean, I can't tell the city to put irrigation in there, even though it should be.
Oh, it's right.
Yeah, they want approval.
Well,
they maintain the landscaping.
It's in the leased area. It's on Verizon.
Right.
So code compliance enforces that?
Well, they have requested guarantees.
Well, we will, because the perimeter buffer is a bondable item. So we'll get a bond, and when it's done, we'll do a maintenance bond. But it only gives you 2 years.
Oh, no. 2 years.
Isn't it 2 years, same year one?
Two.
2 years, yes.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
And the fence is black vinyl chain link. Rodeo. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's what was agreed to by the applicant.
Okay. And can we have something in here that limits it, the height of any future antennas, not lower than what's approved tonight?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to consent to that. The applicant would agree not to lower its antennas, although it's shown on the plans before you without further approval of the board.
That was 107 feet. Right?
It's a center line of 107 feet, so the 6 foot antennas are centered at 107.
That's Verizon's.
Those are Verizon. The city has its own antennas currently located above the shown on the plans.
What if one of the other carriers wants to come in and use that pole and pay Verizon?
I believe they would have to pay the city and enter into a lease with the city. What they could do potentially is apply for a zoning permit to do that. There would be an additional approval process, but I know once a monopole is approved, that carriers will often apply for a zoning permit first, arguing that it should be permissible. So we'll go to your zoning officer.
I think that CC says new antenna requires site. You're allowed to remove and replace existing, and whether and if they change size. I think that's what the FCC regulation says. But for new, like, platforms or new antenna, I think requires site plan stuff. Anybody remember?
Probably. I don't know that it's exempt. So
yeah, I don't think it is.
I think the council's indicating they need to go for a zoning permit. And she would
zoning would determine.
Right.
Because our RF report was strictly for Verizon, the currently proposed Verizon facility, right? So when you start collating and co-locating additional, then perhaps, maybe you want to ask the question, how does that impact the report and summary that we heard this evening for the facility after others have co-located? I don't know.
These are all questions I can't answer. Sorry.
Correct.
I would have a radio frequency engineer come up and talk about that. So the question
is, your report is based upon the currently proposed equipment that's going to go on that pole.
Correct.
It doesn't, with significant factors of safety. It doesn't address potentially other co-locating companies on there and what their exposure limits would generate. So I guess my question is, do we want to hear about that when we start co-locating stuff again? Or is your testimony that it's so low right now that anything else you add is still going to be within requirements?
So the FCC in the Office of Engineering Technology, Bulletin 65, has a categorical exclusion for these types of facilities, provided that the antennas are above 10 meters. So basically what that's saying is if the antennas are above 10 meters, about 30 feet, at ground level at least, the exposure level will be compliant just by virtue of the antenna design, et cetera. We still do demonstrate compliance, but through the report which we furnished, but strictly speaking, I guess it's not required to satisfy the FCC's requirements. So I guess it's a long way of saying it's unlikely that any co-locator could produce exposure levels. However, I mean, in my experience, municipalities usually require a co-locator to then analyze what they've installed in cumulative with what's already there. And I've heard that has, I've heard that made a condition in past applications.
That's not a bad condition, considering you look at 801.
I know.
You don't want to
brought it up. That's why I brought it up. I mean, it's that 100% with everything we've heard based on this, but it should be conditioned upon no additional
lower
additions at a lower elevation.
I can, because I look at that thing's a night. I mean, I don't even want to walk near that building.
So does any application for co-location require to come back to this board?
I've never seen one.
I understand, but is that a condition of this approval?
There's never been one that came back because this is the first time a new pole has ever been put up. What's going on at 801 Asbury, there's already five different wireless companies up there that are permitted by FCC to remove and replace their equipment, even if it's larger, because that's what unless they're putting a new platform thing in, it doesn't require site plan. So this is the first time we've ever heard a new pole or tower, whatever you want to call it, at either board. I mean, zoning board sort of temporary.
My concern is just that there's not, once this thing gets constructed, that there isn't getting sublet out to other people,
right,
who put other carriers or whomever, putting things below what we all agreed to, and it sounds to me like they're amenable to that.
Because Verizon doesn't intend to move their antennas from what's here, that's what the lease specifies.
Right. Is there something in the lease that prohibits Verizon from subleasing?
We don't.
Yes, there is.
The lease
prohibits Verizon from subletting without consent of the city.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the agreement to not add anything below what's approved tonight, which sounds to me like you're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine with me.
Right. So to amend the...
Yeah, can we amend? There's no... No apparatus will be below the existing that's approved tonight. I don't often do that because usually there's enough discussion before we get to it.
All right. Going to repeat all
what? Can I add something?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. But this curb and sidewall thing kind of got under my skin, right? So it's not Verizon, it's the city. But if Verizon destroys the already bad stuff that's there, where do we stand? Is that on the city too? Large trucks, concrete trucks, heavy equipment's going to be coming in and out of that driveway. It's going to destroy it. I know it's bad now, but it's going to be worse. Sidewalk, everything. And they should have to replace that, in my opinion. Or not.
I think with any contractor, usually the contractor, any project, just harm city property, usually require them to fix that as part of the project, permits and things like that.
And I agree. I just wanted to be clear on that because right now we're saying you don't have to do anything with regards to the curb side.
Right. Unless they make it worse. And
right.
I don't know if you can make it worse. Have you seen it? It's pretty bad.
Jim, who signed
it? Sorry.
Otherwise, we'll be here.
Well, so what's the...
I think the construction code officer has
to
say about
that. So I'm going to add to the motion the specific condition that any additional antennas on the monopole will not be placed below 107 feet.
And hopefully through all this discussion tonight, somebody might think that the city's going to replace that curb and sidewalk. I hate to be a bad
I think the city might be so advised.
Okay. Based on what we've heard from our solicitors, can we carry forward a motion? A new motion.
May I have a motion in the affirmative for approval of applicant's application for a minor site plan, conditional use approval, and waivers for the plat requirements specified in the permission reports, and subject to the conditions consented to by the applicant this evening, and the specific condition that any additional antennas on the monopole will not be placed below 107 feet of center line.
Based on that, do we have the motion?
So moved, Adams.
Do I have a second?
Second, Shepard.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Allegretto?
I will vote yes. The applicant did go out in response to the bid the city put out and are doing basically what the bid has asked and required. Certainly just some things they've also agreed to in addition to that that have come up tonight, so I vote yes.
Mr. Barnes?
I vote yes for the previously stated reason, and also the applicant has consented to conditions that I think are really reasonable and are helpful in the project as possibly can.
Mr. Becker?
I am also going to vote yes for the previously stated reasons, and I constantly get dropped calls in that area, so.
Mr. Shepard?
I vote yes for the previously stated.
Mr. Adams?
I'm going to vote yes. I think the applicant put forward very good testimony on all concerns with various experts in all the fields that are represented here. I'm satisfied with the question and answer session that we had and the concessions that the applicant made. And I think it's something that's needed in the area, especially in the summer months, to help our infrastructure. And it's an appropriate place to put it. So,
Mr. Birch?
I will also vote yes. Previously stated.
Mr. Stell?
I vote yes for previously stated reasons. I just hope the outside exterior of this fence and landscape can be improved or cleaned up a little better than what's left right now. But I vote yes.
Mr. Loper?
I vote yes for all the previously stated reasons, and it is for the betterment of the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Will the board be maintaining the marked exhibit, or shall I take it with me? There's only one.
I have it. Oh. No, I have it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
We don't have anything under
It's, we're here, consistency report.
Yes, we have consistency report. 2602, affordable housing. Do I have a motion?
No, Randy.
No, Randy, have to read it. No, go home. My brain's dead.
You should change it. Go ahead.
This is just... Mr. Shule, do you have a report on consistency on 2602?
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, this kind of dovetails in with the report that the city solicitor gave you earlier tonight on the updated housing on the fair share plan. This all dovetails together. This is an ordinance that's replacing in its entirety your affordable housing ordinance, which is some 50 pages. It's not a typical zoning ordinance in that it's more administrative and procedural than substantive, in my opinion, but it's essential that it be updated for the city to stay in conformance with this affordable housing plan. I've given you an ordinance summary, which you may have read or you may not have, but if you haven't, that's okay too. But it's basically, I've indicated what's included in the ordinance. Again, it's procedural, administrative. There's no real zoning issues in there as far as setbacks or any type of controls like that you would typically see in a zoning ordinance. And it's not something you would typically see discussed in a master plan in the detail that's required to construct this type of ordinance. But having said that, the ordinance is relevant to two of the Ocean City master plans. I've cited those on page 3. Encourages municipal actions which will guide the long-term, long-range appropriate use development of lands in the city in a manner which will promote public health, safety, and general welfare of present future residents, and it encourages coordination of numerous regulations and activities which influence land development with the goal of producing efficient uses of land with appropriate development types and scale. So based on my review of the ordinance, the master plan, and the municipal land use law, is my opinion, my professional opinion, that there are no provisions of Ordinance 2602 that are inconsistent with the Ocean City Master Plan, and that Ordinance 2602 is designed to effectuate the land use plan and housing plan elements of the City Master Plan. So if you're in agreement with that,
any questions,
I suggest the solicitor put that in a resolution to forward to the City Council.
Anybody have any questions? If not, we're going to go to a...
open it to the public.
The public. Do I have a motion to open it up to the public?
So moved, Allegretto.
Do I have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody from the public want to talk about the consistency plan? Anybody from the... Nobody from the public? Close the public.
Adams.
I have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Back to our solicitor for a motion on the consistency plan.
May I have a motion in the affirmative for a finding that Ordinance 26-02 is substantially consistent with the Ocean City Master Plan?
Sorry, Joe. Thanks a lot for our solicitor. Do I have a motion? Do I have a second?
Bird.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Allegretto.
Yes.
Mr. Barnes.
Yes.
Mr. Becker.
Yes.
Mr. Shepherd.
Yes.
Mr. Adams.
Yes.
Mr. Birch.
Yes.
Mr. Stell.
Yes.
Mr. Loper.
Yes. We have nothing else on the agenda. Do I have a motion to adjourn?